So next up, we have Dan Brown. And Dan Brown has no introduction. Are you okay with that? The title of Dan's story is Chance Encounters on a Sidewalk.
All right. Thank you. So shortly after college, I landed in a mansion, a decrepit mansion, in the Twin Cities on a giant hill. It was a bohemian mecca. The mansion was owned by a young, prominent sculptor and his wife who was finishing her PhD dissertation. And there was a host of characters they rented rooms to, including myself. Among the roster of peculiar folks were a blues musician, a drummer in a death metal band, the roommate next to me who had recently been released from the asylum because he dug up graves in his late teens, and a host of other people. As you can imagine, there was a lot of fun things that happened there. And in the time I lived there, I got to know the owner, David. He was a phenomenal person, a beautiful person, tall and huge. He worked with his hands and he created these really wonderful things, and he was magnanimous. He was always upbeat and positive, and he had a lovely family, and I really looked up to him. But unfortunately, the bohemian paradise would last for a few months. It would end tragically in a house fire. And I remember standing on the sidewalk, looking up at the big mansion on the hill in flames, and watching the fire department battle the fire. Now, mind you, it was February in Minnesota, and it was cold. And cars were cresting the hill of the street, and they'd stop to gawk at the big house on fire. And we stood there for about an hour, myself and a few other sweet mates. And suddenly, I heard a howl. And I ran up the driveway, and there was David with a fire blanket around his shoulders and the fire chief next to him. And he had another fire blanket around his arms, and he was cradling his two dead cats. And he just sat there and wept, and he was just this huge guy, and he was just convulsing, spasming with grief. And the tears were streaking the soot on his face. And it was a really, really terrible night and event. So I wouldn't see David for another 3 or 4 years. And I suppose that this is the beginning of the small world tale. So by that time, I was living in Chicago, and I really don't think I saw David after the fire. We all went our separate ways, had to find another place to live, and that was that. So I was bartending at a local bar in Chicago, and it was a Monday night, and typically nobody would come in until late at night. And so I sat in the bar, candlelit bar, in the darkness, watching Lynch's Blue Velvet, muted, waiting for people to come in, just enjoying myself in the calm before the craziness would come in the late night. And I had the door propped open. And I looked out the side. The door was about 40 feet away. And for some reason, I looked up and looked out. And I saw two figures in profile in the dark walking by the bar. And I heard a laugh. And I'll never understood why, but I just stood up from the bar and walked to the door. And I stood and leaned out and looked down the sidewalk, and they were about 50, 60 feet at that point. And I shouted, "David." And they stopped. I said, "David, it's Dan Brown." And he was silent, and then he let out a howl and started laughing and ran down the sidewalk. And at the edge of the bar, we embraced, and he came in and we had beers. Turned out he was in town for an art showing. The person he was with was a friend of his, and he had a gallery, and they were there for a showing. So we sit down and we're catching up, and mind you, I haven't seen him since the fire. And so I say, "How is Trisha, his wife, and how's your daughter?" He says, "Well, about a year after the fire, Trisha completed her PhD, and she had to move. Well, she took a job in Dallas, her first academic job, and so we moved to Texas, and unfortunately, a year or two into moving to Texas, we got divorced." And I said, "Geez, well, why are you, what are you still doing down in Texas? There can't be an art scene down in Houston. Why don't you go back up to the Twin Cities where friends and family are?" And he turned and looked at me and he said, "I can't leave my daughter." I said, "Okay." So that was the last time I ever saw David. But strangely enough, 2 years ago, 20 years since the last time I saw David, I'm living in Viroqua, a few blocks away, once again in the fall, painting my house, trying to get it done before the snow flies. And I'm on the ladder, and once again out of the corner of my eye, I see something. And it's my good buddy, Eddie Nix. I'm like, "Hey, Eddie." He's like, "Dan, what's going on?" And he's got a friend with him. So I climb down off the ladder, head over there. Eddie introduces me to his friend. He said, "Hey, this is my friend Trish. She's in town from Texas." Okay. "Hey, Trish, how you doing?" We start talking. Turns out she's a professor of film studies at Rice. "So, really, are you originally from Texas?" "No, I'm from the Twin Cities." Let me reintroduce myself to you, Trish. "I'm your former housemate." And her jaw drops, and we both sit and laugh, and we catch up. Turns out David is, they've been divorced, but David has been selling these huge installations to university campuses, and he's selling stuff to oil magnates and tycoons and hedge funds, and he's done really well for himself. So I think, okay, there's my small world story. That's pretty random, right? I mean, it's not as crazy as being on an island meeting someone from New London, but it's two orders of craziness, right? But something kept gnawing at me this week, and I couldn't place it, and I just kept thinking, yes, a moment, you know, like, if we think about what it means to be the saying, it's a small world, we think about the remote possibility of running into to somebody that we haven't seen or known or that lives close to us in a really far-flung place. And that's obviously what the saying is about. But as I started to think about it in the story, this one story kept creeping in and gnawing at me, and I felt like I had to share it. Because I think it might give us a different context to think about this saying. So here it is briefly. At the same bar where I met David or reconnected with David, about a year later, I had a really strange encounter. Same thing, I had opened the bar up. I was looking forward to having the bar to myself. I'm in the bar alone early in the evening in Chicago. A guy comes into the bar. He says, "Hey, buddy, give me a beer." I say, "What kind of beer?" "Just give me a beer, buddy. Give me a beer and some smokes." Get him a beer, get him some smokes, get him some matches. He says, "Hey, buddy, do me a favor." I'm like, "I'm not your buddy." You know, I'm just about to say that. He reads it right away. He says, "You got a phone in here?" I said, "Of course I got a phone in here." He says, "Good, call the police." So now I'm a little confused and getting a little worried. And I say, "It's just you and I in this bar. Why am I calling the police? Nothing's happened." He says, "Just get the phone." I said, "Look, you're going to have to give me more than that if I'm going to call the police." He says, "I'm turning myself in." I said, "Are you joking?" He didn't respond. But he said it in a way that wasn't some grand gesture. He didn't whisper it. He wasn't proud of it. And so I guess part of me sensed that he was real. And so I said, I'll call his bluff. So I grab the phone right in front of him. I call the police. He just sits there smoking. Get done calling the police. And I'm waiting for this guy to get up and go. I'm thinking either he's playing a joke or he's trying to set something up. He's running a game. He's a grifter. I don't know what's going on. You bartend in Chicago long enough, you see a lot of weird things, right? But this was pretty weird. So 7-8 minutes go by, and it's clear to me this guy's not going anywhere. He's just sitting there smoking. His beer's long been empty. So I grab him another beer. I buy him a beer. I say, "What is going on?" And he just sits there. He doesn't even look at me. He says, "I've been on the run 3 months. I got to go back. If I don't finish my sentence, I'll never see my daughter again." That was it. So sure enough, cops come and take him away. So what does this have to do with the small world? It makes me think that David Gravy crying, holding his cat, staying in Texas because of his daughter, about Trish's love for her daughter when we reconnected, and this guy going back to hell for the love of his daughter, maybe the small world refers to our emotional interior of which we all share or have a similar limited boundary. And in that space, love is the common denominator. Thank you. Yeah.